Welcome to the program Old Testament Prophets with Father Mitch Pacwa.
The Lord be with you all. Shalom Aleichem. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa. I'm a Jesuit priest and a professor of Old Testament at Loyola University in Chicago. And in this series on the prophets, we're taking a look at the prophet Hosea. Now, we've seen how this prophet Hosea was told by the Lord to have for himself a wife of harlotries, and that this wife was to symbolize the land of Israel, and that the children he was to have were children of harlotries, and they were to symbolize the children of Israel, the people. And these people, these children and this wife, were also to symbolize the way the people had sinned against the Lord, as well as a certain hope for the future, that they would eventually be restored, but they would not be restored until they had first been punished for all of their sins. Now, let's take a look a little more specifically at Hosea's teachings and his oracles, his sayings to the people of Israel. Open up to the book of Hosea, chapter 4, and you'll find Hosea right after the book of Daniel. Now, in chapter 4, we see one of the very common forms of speech among the prophets, and that is the covenant lawsuit. In Hebrew, it's called riv. And the covenant lawsuit was the kind of speech that we saw earlier on with the prophets, that they would speak against the people of Israel for breaking the covenant. Now remember what we've said before. Prophets are messengers of Yahweh, the King of Israel. And as messengers of Yahweh, the King of Israel, the King who chose to make a covenant with Israel, they will come and accuse the people of Israel of having broken the covenant. And they'll even use the word riv, that is, conflict or lawsuit, in the speech. And so we see here, Shim'u devar Yahweh, that is, hear the word of Yahweh. And again, the word hear or listen doesn't just mean let it go in one ear and out the other. Listen means to obey as well. For Yahweh has a lawsuit, a covenant lawsuit, with the inhabitants of the land. So why does he have this lawsuit? What's the problem? Because there is no truth and there is no chesed. Now chesed is a very specific Hebrew word. Your Bible will probably say mercy or loving kindness, or perhaps it will say covenant love. That's the real meaning of it. Chesed is a specific kind of word that means the love somebody has when they're in a covenant relationship with somebody else. And that's the kind of love that Israel does not have for God. Now, how does this lack of truth and this lack of covenant love, this lack of chesed, show up? A number of ways. There's no knowledge of God in the land. That is, people don't relate to God. They're not in personal union with God. See, the word knowledge in Hebrew does not just mean knowing something with your head. As a matter of fact, there is not a single passage in the whole Old Testament that says anybody knows anything with their head. You know with your heart. You know with your liver. You know with your kidneys. You know with your inner organs, your intestines. Because knowledge was something you experienced. And here, this people did not experience the Lord. Now we have to examine our own selves. Do we experience God? Do we know the Lord in a personal way? Or do we simply know about God? And if it's just knowledge about God and things about God, that can't save us. That's not enough. We need to know God in the sense of being in relationship. But Israel is not in a relationship. They have no knowledge of God. And therefore, God brings a covenant lawsuit against them for not knowing the Lord. What else do? Well, they swear and they lie. Now, by swearing, they don't just mean cussing and using four-letter words. No, they mean swearing an oath, but then lying about it, swearing false oaths. That goes against the commandment. The Eighth Commandment says, you shall not bear false witness against your neighbor. That's what they were doing. They were also killing, murdering, stealing, committing adultery. They were breaking all bounds, and blood touches blood. That is, there was violence everywhere. And one bit of violence led to more violence. And it was this kind of breaking of the Ten Commandments that was a breaking of the covenant. And in our own culture, don't we see the same things going on? How many people multiply lawsuits? Not simply because they need it, but simply because it's possible to win a lawsuit, and therefore you get money off it, try to become rich off of it. And then sometimes perhaps swear falsely. And how many times do we see murder and stealing going on in our culture? And it's that kind of breaking of covenant that gets condemnation from God. Therefore the land mourns, and everyone who dwells in it languishes, with all the beasts of the field and the fowls of heaven, the birds of heaven, and even the fish of the sea are taken away. That the sins of the people of Israel affect the whole environment. Not just them personally, not just their own sin, but the environment is affected by sin. So also is it with us. Look at our own environment, at our own animals. How many animals are endangered species, and how much our environment is endangered because of the selfishness and greed of people. The whole earth suffers from this. And even this goes back to Adam and Eve. Was not the alienation between the human beings and the animals a result of their sin? So also do we see here in Hosea. But then in verses 4 through 11 we see a new tack. He then begins to deal with the priests. He goes on to say, now, don't let just anyone strive, and don't just let anyone be brought to task. For the people are as they that strive with the priest. In other words, the people are acting this way because the priests of Israel act this way. Therefore you shall stumble in the day, and the prophet also shall stumble with you in the night, and I will destroy your mother. Now by mother they mean the land of Israel. And he'll destroy the land of Israel because those who are prophets and those who are priests are not teaching God's law, they are not teaching God's covenant, they're not inviting to personal relationship, and they themselves are not in the relationship. They themselves have no knowledge of God. And so the land will suffer. We're looking at Hosea chapter 4, and we've begun to look at the part where he attacks the priests and the prophets of Israel. And he comes against them with a covenant lawsuit. They also have broken the covenant they made. And so he brings them to court, as it were, in this covenant lawsuit. Now his accusation against the priest goes on in verse 6 of chapter 4. And he says, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge, because you have rejected knowledge. Now, there's a connection then between the priests and the prophets, having no personal knowledge of God themselves, but simply going through the motions of ceremonies. And because they simply go through the motions without spending time in prayer, without spending time before God, without knowing God in the sense of being in personal relationship with God, therefore the people is destroyed for the lack of knowledge of God, for the lack of knowledge of Torah, that is, of instruction, of God's commands. And for that, Yahweh is furious with the priests. And one of the things I would say to any of my brother priests is that we ourselves must also spend lots of time before God. Bishop Sheen recommends that we spend an hour a day before the Blessed Sacrament in the presence of Christ so that we can be with Him, spend an hour with Him like He asked of His disciples in the Garden of Gethsemane. So that we can know God, and as we know God, then have some substance to communicate in our own sermons, and when we celebrate Mass, to have a sense of the presence of God that comes from us knowing God. So we ourselves are gravely responsible for the knowledge of God in our own lives, so that our people not perish and not be destroyed by lack of knowledge of God in their lives. He goes on to say, I will reject you, and you shall be no priest to me, because you have forgotten the law of your God, and I will also forget your children. And of course, the priests of Judaism were married, and they had children. And that they would take care of the families on what they made as priests. But because they reject God, and because they forget the law of God, the Torah of God, His instruction, so will God forget them. And, you know, with all the theological training that priests and ministers get, it becomes very easy to neglect God and forget Him. You get so caught up in what we know and this nuance and that nuance and trying to deal with this group and that group, and we forget God. The Lord will not stand for that from us who are ministers. We must know the Lord and keep Him ever in mind if we're to be faithful ministers, faithful to His covenant that He made with us personally as well as with His people. The more they were increased, the more they sinned against me, and I will change their glory into shame. The more that the priests got, they would tell the people to bring sacrifices and bring lots of sacrifices frequently, and the priests would get a portion of it, a good 10%, some for themselves. And the more that they got for themselves, the worse off they became. And again, how often doesn't that happen even today? Priests who become rich. Ministers who bring in lots of money. TV ministers who bring in all kinds of dough for themselves. Does that not pervert us? Does that not make us ones who preach the gospel for the sake of what they'll pay us, who are prophets for what we get? And that is not what God wants from us. As a matter of fact, we ought to imitate Jesus and Him poor. We need to be poor like Jesus was poor, so that we don't preach with any sense of attachment to physical things, but we teach simply what we know because we know God, because we know the Lord. We're in personal relationship with Him. They feed on the sin of my people and set their heart on their iniquity. So that the priests try to identify with the people's sin by sinning. Rasputin did that. Rasputin, the monk of Russia, who had been the spiritual director, and I use the term in quotes, of the Tsarina. And this one said, this Rasputin said, how can I understand the sins of the people unless I commit them? Folly on such things. We priests are not to identify with the people by committing their sins. Rather, we're to identify ourselves with them because we are first of all identified with God, and we call the people to love God. That is what our life is about. It is like the people and like the priest. That is, just as the people are going to be punished for their sins and their breaking of the covenant, so also will every priest be punished. Just because a person is a priest, because a man is ordained, that does not mean he's going to heaven automatically. Because a man is ordained a bishop or cardinal or a pope, that is not assurance of salvation. Assurance of salvation is a gift of God. And it's being faithful to God, it is being true to God that will bring us to heaven. And if we are unfaithful to God, then on the day of judgment, the Lord will condemn us for our iniquity. I will punish him for his ways, and I will recompense him for his deeds. So, if we do evil deeds, we'll have an evil recompense. If we do good deeds, the Lord will bring us to be with himself. They shall eat and not have enough. They shall commit harlotry and they shall not increase. Even if they go out and have sexual relations with lots of women outside from their wives, they still won't have increase because Yahweh will stop them. Because they have failed to take heed of Yahweh. Harlotry, wine, new wine take away the heart. All of this folly, drunkenness, sexual lewdness and sexual sin, all of that is forbidden. And we must be faithful, even more faithful. And Hosea goes on in verse 12 and following to continue to describe the sins of religion in the people of Israel. It says, my people ask counsel and of their sticks, and they go to their staff and to declare to them the future. Because the spirit of harlotry has caused my people to err, and they've gone astray from their God. In other words, the people have gone to idols or sticks like, I Ching and other forms of divination. They go to find out what is going to be the future from things like astrology and other foolishness. And that is forbidden to them. But they do that because they are like harlots in the heart. They go against God. And it's like committing adultery against God to go and consult things besides God. We're going through Hosea chapter 4. And we've seen how Hosea is especially strong in bringing the priests and the prophets to a covenant lawsuit and accusing them of being unfaithful to the covenant. But now he's also going to go on and criticize the whole people for their sin. And let's take a look at chapter 4, verse 13. They sacrifice on the tops of the mountains, and they offer upon the hills. Now, the reason people would do that is they believed that being on top of the mountains, they were closer to God. So they'd go up to the tops. But they sacrifice also under oaks and poplars and terebinths, because the shadow of them are good. And your daughters commit harlotry, and your daughter-in-law commit adultery. Now, what's going on here? It seems that the people of Israel would go to the tops of hills, especially if a hill had a large tree, like a poplar, an oak, or a terebinth, which is a kind of evergreen tree that spreads out wide. And they would go underneath those trees as signs of fertility. And they would have ritual prostitution to go underneath there, or just simply orgies. See, prostitution means they're paying for sex. Orgies, they do it for free and just go wild with it. And it seems that the people of Israel did this as a way to try to get fertility in the earth. Now, we know a few things about Baal religion, but not a whole lot. A number of clay tablets were found at a Canaanite city called Ugarit, which is up on the northern coast of what is now Syria, near the mouth of the Orontes River. And in there we found lots of clay tablets with the stories of the gods of the Canaanites, Baal and Ashtaroth and Asherah and Anat and El. And in there it even says that those who go and have orgies in the name of Baal are wrong. Baal is not pleased with such things. So that the Canaanites, at least of Ugarit, did not agree with having orgies on top of the hills. And they thought that was a sin. But it seems, from what we see here in Hosea, that Israel went ahead and did it. Now, if Israel is going to have these orgies on the tops of the mountains, what that means is that they invented it themselves, perhaps. Maybe they did learn it from some of the other Canaanites, but Hosea never accuses them of importing the idea of an orgy from the Canaanites. He accuses Israelites of these orgies, perhaps because they invented it themselves. They came up with this sin, making religion worse. And that they were syncretizing this kind of religion with Yahweh religion. Now, by syncretize, what I mean is this. They would take and say, we're going to worship Yahweh and Baal, and we're going to worship both of them by having ritual sex on top of the hills. There'll be parties with drinking and drunkenness. And you already mentioned that up above here, that they have gone all kinds of drinking and drunkenness. And then after they've been soused, then they have these orgies. Now, doesn't that sound in some ways like certain aspects of our own drug-imbued culture? You know, I just was recently hearing how 10,000 teenagers from Chicago alone wrote letters to a certain TV star about how they themselves use all kinds of drugs all the time or frequently. And that this is just one city, 10,000 kids. And it's all throughout our culture. We're a drug culture. And we're also a culture addicted to sexuality. And we see that kind of thing condemned here in Hosea. I will not punish your daughters when they commit harlotry, nor your daughters-in-law when they commit adultery, for they themselves consort with lewd women. In other words, the men are just as bad as the women. You can't blame the women and punish them and stone them for it, because the men are doing the same thing. They sacrifice with harlots, and the people that is without understanding is distraught. That this people doesn't understand. They're all confused. They're distraught in the sense of running around in circles because of their own sexual immorality and their own addictiveness to different drugs, to chemicals. Chemical dependence is what we call it now. And you, though you, Israel, play the harlot, don't let Judah become guilty. Don't let Judah come up to Gilgal and not to come up to Beth Aven, nor swear as Yahweh lives. In other words, don't let Judah go up and worship at the same places. And we can see how the people of Judah would be attracted to such celebrations. I mean, orgies in the name of God can sound like a lot of fun. And now Hosea is warning Judah, don't you follow this way of Israel or you're going to be punished too. Then he goes on to say, for Israel is as stubborn as a heifer. Now, if a heifer doesn't want to move someplace and just stays put, you can't move them. They're just hard to move. They're so big. So if Israel is stubborn like a heifer, how shall Yahweh feed them as a lamb in a large place? Well, you can't. That's the answer. You can't. How can Israel be like a pet lamb? And lambs are oftentimes pets. We saw that back with David. And that a lamb is used as a comparison of a pet. And a comparison to a wife, as we see in 2 Samuel chapter 12. And so, how can Yahweh go and bring back Israel, his lamb, when they're stubborn like a heifer? How can Jesus, the good shepherd, come after us and bring us up home to his green pastures? How can Jesus go around searching all over and then put us on his shoulders if you and I are as stubborn as heifers? He can't. We have to become gentle like lambs and not like heifers. And also the heifer here, we see that Baal is oftentimes portrayed as a bull in northern Israel. And the heifer would be, therefore, his consort, his wife. And perhaps he's comparing Israel to like a young cow being in relationship with a bull, Baal. And saying if they're like that, when false religion, how can Yahweh be their shepherd? Like a lamb. Is Ephraim, that is the northern kingdom of Israel, is joined to idols. Let them alone. When their carouse is over, they take to harlotry. After they're done drinking, they go and they have prostitutes. Her rulers love dishonor. They wind, the wind has bound her up in her skirts, and they shall be ashamed because of their sacrifices. Now, Israel had to suffer much punishment for all of this sin, drunkenness, carousing, harlotry, prostitution, orgies. And they suffered greatly because of it. Now, we as the people of Christ, as members of His church, must seek to follow Him. Let Him be our good shepherd to lead us to His purity and His goodness. God bless you.